Hello and welcome to this month's Life Notes, which move you one book closer to living 12 category smart. This is Jessie Kohlhagen, and you're listening to the Life Note, Come As You Are, by Dr. Emily Nagoski, PhD, and summarized by Marcia Joseph. As always, we'll begin with a quote. Listen to the small, quiet voice inside you that says, yes, more, or no, stop. Listen especially when that voice is saying both at once. When that happens, be compassionate with yourself. Go slow. When you look out there, you'll find inspiration and entertainment and amazing science and support too. But you won't find the truth of your own sexual well-being. What you want, what you like, what you need. To find that, look inside. End quote. Come As You Are, subtitled The Surprising New Science That Will Transform Your Sex Life, shares new insights about sexuality, including dispelling certain myths about what's normal when it comes to sexual desire. This empowering book will help you realize that you're more than okay just the way you are, and you no longer have to live by outdated ideas and rules surrounding your sexual nature. Dr. Emily Nagoski is the Director of Wellness Education at Smith College, teaching women's sexuality. She has several noteworthy degrees and has authored several guides and a blog focusing on sexuality. Big thoughts we'll review in this life note include your sexual personality and the dual control model, sensation in context, outdated ideas about sex, being beautiful as you are, how sex is not a drive, and finally, changing the goal and making sex about pleasure. If you're ready to open your mind about your sex life, get ready to learn some new, great insights in this interesting book. The first big thought, your sexual personality, the dual control model. Quote, you can immediately conceptualize all sexual functioning and all sexual dysfunction as a balance or imbalance between brakes and accelerator. End quote. The idea of a dual control model to your sexual personality is an interesting concept, and it can definitely help you to better understand what's happening for you when it comes to thinking about sex. Essentially, there are two controls in sexual response, the brakes and the accelerator. So you'll want to learn how to, quote, turn on the ons and turn off the offs, and ultimately learn to flow naturally somewhere between the two. The accelerator, which is also named the sexual excitation system, or SES, is, quote, constantly scanning your context, including your own thoughts and feelings, for things that are sexually relevant, end quote. In the sight of sexy lingerie or the smell of a great cologne that turns you on, these would factor into turning on your accelerator, for example. But wait, we're not done yet. You also need to take into account the turn-offs, the sexual brakes, or the sexual inhibition system, or SIS. These would include factors that your brain perceives to be the ones that would make it not a good idea for you to be aroused right now. If you're in a business meeting, the author suggests that this would be an example of when your brakes would likely come into play. Understanding your dual control model, or your partner's, can be very helpful in having a more rewarding sex life. If you learn, for example, that your partner's sexual brakes go on when there is clutter in the bedroom, this could be a good motivator to be a little tidier, right? Or if you know that being in a romantic environment, perhaps with privacy and away from kids, is a sexual accelerator for you or your partner, there's an added incentive to make sure to schedule a date night and get the babysitter lined up. There's a sexual temperament questionnaire in the book, so this would be a great way for you to better understand both of your accelerators and your brakes. And you just might start putting the pedal to the metal and accelerating a little more often as a result of what you learn. The next big thought, sensation in context, enjoying, expecting, and eagerness. Quote, learning to recognize the contexts that increase your brain's perception of the world as a sexy place and having skills to maximize the sexy contexts is key to increasing your sexual satisfaction. End quote. Whether you find a situation or action particularly sexy depends on the context. One example the author uses is this. Quote, if your partner spanks your butt while you're in the middle of tying your toddler's shoes, it's annoying. But if your partner spanks your butt in the middle of sex, it can feel very, very sexy indeed. End quote. The point is that sexiness depends on what context you're in. One practical benefit of this information is that it might make you a little more forgiving of yourself when you're not feeling sexy or when the sex isn't great. It doesn't mean something is wrong with you, Nagoski tells us. Maybe the context is wrong. Perhaps you're feeling stressed, or there's some other circumstance which is influencing how you feel. Maybe you just had a baby and sex is the last thing on your mind. These types of factors will naturally have an influence. Nagoski says that, quote, if we ignore context, then anyone who finds sex unfun or whose desire diminishes may be tempted to conclude she's broken or just doesn't like sex, when all she needs is a better context, end quote. Lifebook members, this could be food for thought for your strategy section of the love category in your lifebook. Why not delve further into which contexts make you feel sexier and do the same with your partner? Are your contexts the same or different? Do you like things a little safer or a little wilder than your partner? Are there environments or emotions that are particularly conducive to having a great sex life? And are you fully tapping into those insights? Can you experiment a bit with contexts? You could have some particularly fruitful discussions with your partner about this concept if you take the time to deliberately consider it together. And why not add a bit of spicy personal research in as well? The next big thought: outdated ideas about sex. Three messages. Quote, many of us have absorbed ideas about sex that are at home in a century-old sex manual, even though all the research and political change since then has busily dismantled every single aspect of those old ideas. End quote. It might be time to update your mental programming about sex. As the author notes, many ideas and opinions about sex can use some updating. And she also wants you to feel as though you have permission to be who you are and feel what you feel without feeling bad about that. In another book that we reviewed called Mating in Captivity by Esther Perel, be sure to check out that life note, she echoed similar sentiments and noted the puritanical attitudes about sex and marriage that still carry their legacy into today's relationships, sometimes detrimentally. Let's explore these three messages that Emily Nagoski says are outdated ideas that women typically experience in America. Number one, the moral message, you are damaged goods. Number two, the medical message, you are diseased. And number three, the media message, you are inadequate. In the moral message, women are made to feel that, quote, if you want or like sex, you're a slut, end quote. In particular, she notes that the prevailing attitude for women, not men, is that if you've had too many partners, there's something wrong with you. In the medical message, sexual functioning is supposed to happen in a certain particular order. For example, first desire, then arousal, and then simultaneous orgasm with your partner. And if it doesn't, you're made to feel like something is wrong with you. And in the media message, you're told that if your body is not perfect, and if you're not experimenting with all sorts of different positions or other such activities, then you're not up to par. The empowering aspect of the author's view is that you simply don't have to believe in any of this nonsense. What's right for you might be different than what's right for someone else. And what was right for Puritans might not be so relevant anymore. It's time to develop your own views on what works for you, what seems right and what feels right for your unique situation and personality. The next big thought: you're beautiful. Criticism, compassion, and sex. Quote, self-criticism is an invasive weed in the garden, but too many of us have been taught to treat it like a treasured flower, even as it strangles the native plants of our sexuality, end quote. Self-criticism is rampant in general, but it can be particularly problematic when it comes to your sex life. There is a direct trade-off between sexual well-being and self-critical thoughts about your body, according to Nagoski. In fact, she mentions that there was a review of 57 studies encompassing over 20 years of research that, quote, found important links between body image and just about every domain of sexual behavior you can imagine, end quote. In addition to being self-critical when it comes to body image, you can also be judgmental about what's happening as part of the sexual experience. Perhaps you feel you should act a certain way or enjoy certain aspects of sex, but not others. There's a lot of judgment going on that can interfere with sexual pleasure. To combat all of this negative self-talk, work on both ignoring those self-critical thoughts and deliberately focusing on more self-appreciating thoughts. One good exercise the author suggests is to imagine that those self-critical statements are instead coming from a good friend, and that she's asking you for help with her problem. How would you empathetically respond? Nagoski reminds us to, quote, never say anything to yourself that you wouldn't want to say to your best friend or daughter, end quote. Great advice, isn't it? Why would we treat ourselves worse than we treat a friend or family member? Yet, we readily do this constantly. If you're interested in exploring this topic further, in addition to the great insights in this book, you might also benefit from reading about non-judging in Wherever You Go, There You Are by Jon Kabat-Zinn. Check out that life note too. Throughout Come As You Are, Nagoski uses the analogy of a garden when it comes to our sex life. And when it comes to self-criticism, she advises, quote, no matter what was planted in your garden, no matter how you've been tending it, you are the gardener, end quote. So if you've planted self-criticism and self-doubt in your own garden, it's time to pull those weeds right out of there. You are beautiful just the way you are. The next big thought. Sex is not a drive. It's an incentive motivation system. Quote, the standard narrative of sexual desire is that it just appears. You're sitting at lunch or walking down the street. Maybe you see a sexy person or think a sexy thought, and pow, you're saying to yourself, I would like some sex. This is how it works for maybe 75% of men and 15% of women. End quote. That description is what the author describes as spontaneous desire. Another type of desire is responsive desire, meaning that it's more dependent on context or certain conditions that you respond to. The difference between men and women on spontaneous versus responsive is notable. Yet these differences are not always taken into account, and Nagoski notes that women often feel, quote, relieved to know that there's nothing wrong with them, that they just need more of a reason to have sex than folks with a spontaneous style do, end quote. So in other words, if you need some candlelight, soft music, champagne, or whatever else gets you in the mood, then by all means, don't feel bad about that. Another way of looking at this point is Nagoski's distinction that sex is not a drive. She explains that hunger or thirst might be similar to a drive, where you're pushed towards taking actions, such as eating or drinking, in order to survive. But sex isn't like that. It's more of an incentive motivation system that pulls you forward rather than being pushed by discomfort. The author's feeling is that if sex is considered a drive, this tends to justify the misconception that there is something wrong with you if you have a more responsive style. This seems to be important information for men and women to understand that their normal styles are often very different from each other. So rather than get frustrated by these differences, realize they're normal and learn to adapt to your partner's needs. Be a little more understanding if you can. Don't let your differences simmer below the surface without talking about them. There's great research-based information in Come As You Are, so you'll no doubt find some other key insights that can make your sex life even more rich and rewarding. The final big thought, changing the goal. Make it about pleasure. Quote, for many of us, the goal states we have in mind, such as spontaneous desire or orgasm with intercourse, are not goals we have chosen consciously for ourselves. We absorbed them from our culture in the form of sexual scripts. These scripts provide the structure for the beliefs through which we interpret the sexual world. End quote. One of the important themes in Come As You Are is that what you want, need, or enjoy can be unique to you, and they don't have to follow scripts from someone else. For example, just because there's an expectation that sexual desire happens spontaneously doesn't mean that it happens that way for you. As we learned earlier, the context matters, and it may take you longer to warm up to the idea of sex. Women in particular are frequently different than men in feeling spontaneous desire, and that is absolutely okay. As noted in Nagoski's quote above, there are certain goals that we think we should have that when we don't have, make us feel like something's wrong with us. The author shares her own evolution of thinking when it comes to sex. Quote, I gained a radically more healthful attitude that a woman's body and her pleasure belong to her and no one else, that it's possible to say no to intercourse without saying no to all the other things that come with it, the love and the affection and the pleasure and the play, and that my own internal experience was a legitimate guide for whether or not I wanted to try something." End quote. In other words, having the goal of pleasure is a worthy goal in and of itself. So while the media or external scripts might lead you to believe that you should have certain goals or timelines or behaviors or attitudes when it comes to sex, you should really only be listening to what feels right for you. Are you enjoying yourself? Are you satisfied? Does it feel right? If so, who cares what someone else thinks you should do or feel? There's so much more to learn in this enlightening book. It's sure to leave you feeling inspired and empowered. It's time to discard any of the conditioned narratives that do not serve your sexual liberation and follow what feels good to you. So there we have it, Emily Nagoski's science-based insights to transform your sex life. We hope you found it valuable and insightful. Thank you so much for listening in. We look forward to sharing more wisdom with you again soon. And until next time, here's to moving one book closer to living 12 Category Smart.